we speak really quickly, Tom can slow it down in the edit so we can go and watch the football.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, to Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today, we are in Sarzeau.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Vannes. We're at the port in Vannes in Brittany. France is on fête this evening because it's the World Cup semi-final. You probably hear some hooting and general hubbub in the background. France versus Belgium. We're outside the restaurant Atlantique, which will be serving us some fish in front of a television very shortly.
And it's very bustly, isn't it?
It's very bustly. This is
the air is crackling with excitement here.
Yeah, you don't feel any tension then. It's really the more, you know, you can feel it's more feisty than just, you know. I think France are very confident of winning that game. And let's face it, France are very confident of winning this World Cup.
France are just very confident, Francois, full stop. There's a Belgian restaurant over there, nobody in it. We should have gone and eaten there. Anyway, this is not the football podcast.
No, it's certainly not.
There's enough of them. This is the Cycling Podcast. My name is Richard Moore. I'm with Francois Thomazeau and Lionel Burney.
Hello.
And, well, we are in the centre of Vannes, and we've just watched the finish of Stage 4 in nearby Sarzeau, which is the small town by the sea, where the mayor is one David Lapartion, the UCI president. Did you spot him, anybody spot him today?
Well, actually, I didn't spot David Lapartien neither at the start nor at the finish. But when I was at the start, I actually spotted the director of the Tour de France, the real big chief, that, you know, Yann Lemoyneur, and he told me David Lapartien was there. And I know David Lapartien was there for one good reason. He was on French television later during the after the stage.
How many roundabouts did we count on the way in to his town?
There were not that many roundabouts, actually. I was not disappointed.
Just one, but very fancy one.
But it was just outside Sarzeau, actually. So I'm not sure it's within his jurisdiction. But, yeah, so if you doubt, you know, about the purity of David Lapartien's authority, in terms of roundabout, he was pretty disappointed.
Well, based on the number of roundabouts, I'd say he's a man of integrity.
He seems
but
to be.
He is engaged in a war of words, isn't he, currently, with another Dave Brailsford.
Yeah, Dave Brailsford, who described him a couple of days ago to...
Accurately, as a town mayor.
As a town mayor, but said he had a town mayor's mentality, which
mentality. Let's be precise.
Yeah,
because it seemed in his mouth apparently to be even worse than just a mayor's mentality. Anyway,
well, it was loaded with pejorative sentiment, wasn't it? And Lapartion had a riposte on TV today, Francois.
Absolutely.
What did he say?
Well, he said that I'd pretend I'm David Lapartien. He said, I really don't understand what Dave Brailsford means, because I'm proud of having a mayor's mentality, because I'm a mayor, and if he meant to insult the mayors of France, he's actually insulting France, and he's insulting the very people who stage Tour de France stages, you know. Without the French mayors, no Tour de France. So Dave Brailsford should not insult the mayors of France, because that's insulting France, and that's also indirectly insulting the Tour de France.
That's a firm backhand return, isn't it? Cross court.
Well, it is, and with topspin, and probably rightly so, because I think whenever anyone in cycling forgets that they're racing on the public roads at public expense, an event that, although, well, it's not publicly owned, but there are huge public finances committed to it, both in terms of the television coverage and every road being closed and every gendarme that is paid for. I don't want to escalate this, because this war of words, if that's what we have to call it, is in danger of becoming a little unseemly and unnecessary. But I think that everyone involved in cycling should just remember how the Tour de France is put on. And we're here in the centre of a town not far away from Sarzeau, and there will no doubt be people who've come here to watch the Tour de France, and it's an event for the people. So
I agree that was perhaps ill-advised and pejorative, but Brailsford should have actually been more specific if he wanted to criticise Lapartio and said exactly what he was criticising him for, rather than this sort of caricature that he attempted to paint. And what he was criticising for was that, you know, the Chris Froome subutinal test was leaked on Lapartio's watch, not just after Lapartio became president, that throughout the process, while Brailsford would argue, Team Sky observed the confidentiality that they were bound to, the UCI, he would say, did not. Lapartio spoke about the case publicly on a number of occasions. An interesting little tidbit which I gleaned the other day, speaking to Dave Brailsford, I asked him about his relationship with Lapartio, and he said he doesn't have one. In fact, they have never had a conversation, which I found surprising. Chris Froome has never had a conversation with Lapartio.
Which is, well, maybe it's a little bit surprising, but in the same time, I mean, whatever their personal relationships, and this is all very childish. I mean, I think cycling deserves better than these quarrels. I mean, it's like, you know, schoolboys, little rows. I mean, it's not very interesting.
We're going to quarrel if we don't get on with the stage and the tail of the attack.
Yeah, let's not dignify it by discussing it too much further. Yes, yeah, stage four, La Bolle to Sarzeau, 195 kilometres. Four men were in the break, two of them Belgian, two of them French. Guillaume van Kersbroek of Wanty Group Gobert, Jérôme Cousin of Direct Energy, Anthony Perez of Cofidis, and Dimitri Clice of Cofidis. Cousin and Perez are the Frenchmen. Two French riders, two Belgians. So I'm going to say 2-2 after extra time and penalties.
I'm going to say yellow card to you for another football reference, well, Lionel, it's fine. So early.
Anyway, they had nearly 8 minutes with 120 kilometres to go, a good old gap. It came down quite dramatically to around about 2.5 with 50k to go, and then there was a crash with the likes of Dan Martin, Jakob Fuglsang, Bauke Mollema, Mikkel Lander, Steven Kruiswijk involved. So that was a lot of GC riders from a lot of teams, so the peloton slowed down to allow them to get back on, and so the break went up again, and it took the peloton quite a long time to bring that break under control. And we'll talk a bit about the politics of the chase, because Quickstep did an awful lot of the work. Tim de Klerk did an awful lot of Quickstep's work for them, and they weren't terribly happy about the lack of cooperation from other teams that might have wanted to win the stage. Then there was a crash with around 5 kilometres to go. The gap by this stage was down, really hanging in the balance whether these four would get caught. But that crash brought down Rigoberto Urán, who regained the peloton thanks to his teammates from EF Education First, and Ilnur Zakarin of Katusha, who unfortunately didn't make it back. Unfortunately for him, he lost 59 seconds. The break, I thought they had a really good chance with even 2 kilometres to go. There was a slim possibility, but it was very slim possibility by that stage. But the crash had given the advantage back to them, because the peloton was reduced in size. However, it was not to be, and in the sprint finish, Fernando Gaviria won for Quickstep, justifying all of that work that his teammates did. He was just ahead of Peter Sagan and Andre Greipel, and it really was. You could throw a Cholet handkerchief over the three of them at the finish. They were that close on the line. So Gaviria's second stage win, no real changes overall. Greg Van Avermaet is still in yellow. Sagan is still in green. Dion Smith still in the King of the Mountains jersey. And Søren Krogh Andersen is still in the white jersey. One other little bit of news is that Axel Domont of AG2R, he was one of the crash victims. He's fractured his collarbone. Francois, left collarbone this time?
No, it's a right collarbone this time, because this guy is very unlucky. He fractured his left collarbone in the past 5 times.
Extraordinary bad luck, and that means he is out of the Tour de France, and Romain Bardet loses a very valuable helper for the hilly stages. So there we are. As we expected, you know, Gaviria on these flat finishes is the best, but today not by that much.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
I'm Simon from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that riding's the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world, and we host 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast, being our headline sponsor. And a little reminder that we will, of course, be running Pedlar Deschamps giving one of the wonderful Rafa t-shirts to a lucky rider later this week. Well, actually, we'll be giving the t-shirt at the start of next week because the t-shirts are arriving with Orla Shinawi on the rest day. So, Pedlar Deschamps, we've had a few nominations already. Catherine Elliott nominated Tim DeClercq, who we're going to hear from a bit later on, did a power of work today. She had a reason for nominating, which I'll look up in a moment. Adam Yates for his sunglasses. Liam Hopkinson suggests Adam Yates. A few suggestions for Sylvain Chavanel, riding his 18th Tour de France. And Ben Hazlett and Stephen Tunstall have suggested Lawson Craddock, the subject of Kilometre Zero today, which went out this morning. Paul O'Brien has suggested Jack Bauer for looking after Adam Yates so well after his Stage 2 crash. So quite a few suggestions coming in. Keep them coming. And we will put it to a poll towards the end of the week and award the first Pedlar Deschamps at the start of next week. The nomination for Tim DeClercq actually was when, after chasing Sylvain Chavanel all day, DeClercq then made a point of congratulating Chavanel when the breakaway was caught. There was a lovely moment when they were both at the back of the peloton and DeClercq tapped Chavanel in the back and they had a laugh and a joke about their shared experience. So, yeah, that's the sort of thing we're looking for. Keep your nominations coming in and we'll pick four riders to go to the Twitter poll. So the stage today, another win for Fernando Gaviria. As you mentioned, Lionel, Quickstep not too happy at the finish because they, well, and this was interesting because we were watching these four riders in the break, all very committed to it, and we were giving them great kudos for appearing to be on the verge of defying, you know, the bunch, which is what breakaways so rarely do these days. And you look at it and you think, well, that's because they're riding so hard and you know, the bunch have underestimated them. But actually, it's also to do with what's going on in the bunch and who's chasing behind and how committed they are. And there were a lot of politics going on there. Gaviria obviously won on day one. And often in the Tour, you know, if a sprinter becomes dominant, then other teams are less willing to do their share of the work. And it's still very much up in the air in terms of who's the dominant sprinter here, perhaps not after today. But clearly other teams were looking to Quickstep to take responsibility for bringing that break back.
Maybe the reason is, as we mentioned from since the start of this Tour de France, is that Quickstep is the only team with a real train. Other teams, I mean, Marcel Kittel is struggling because he doesn't have like three or four riders working for him these days. And it's true that, you know, as Christophe Laporte told me on the very first day, now sprinters generally have one or two riders working with them. So they don't organize a chase the way the trains used to do in the past. And maybe Quickstep is the only team that's actually in a capacity to organize, you know, such chases. Anyways, Tim DeClercq had a finish, and Brian Holm, whom I talked to, were very, very angry at the other team and kind of derogatory, saying, you know, Brian Holm called other teams Mickey Mouse teams and Mickey Mouse tactics. So, well, maybe...
Well, they were angry, but also happy. It was a weird angry, happy combination.
It's the best way to be, isn't it? Angry about your rivals, but victorious and correct. I mean, they were right in the end. But should we hear from Brian Holm and from Tim DeClercq?
Yeah, I mean, just before we do, worth saying, you know, with these eight-man teams, guys like, there are fewer guys like Tim DeClercq, who big rulers, and he's really on his own for a lot of the stages. I think we're probably close to kickoff, judging by the noise around us in the football match. But Tim DeClercq It has already become a very recognisable figure. He's a big, tall, rangy rider, and he's been sitting for mile upon mile, or kilometre upon kilometre, if you're listening, Daniel Freeb, at the front of the bunch, chasing down these moves. I spoke to him, and Francois, you spoke to Brian Holm. Let's hear first from Tim DeClercq, and then from Brian Holm. Today, more than ever, you needed to work very hard, didn't you?
Yeah, I knew this was going to be my job when I came into the Tour de France, but... To be honest, I thought for sure today we got to get some more help from other teams. In the beginning, we got some help from Lotto Jumbo, FDG, and Lotto. But after that uphill section, I had to do a fair bit of riding alone. And to be honest, I thought for sure that if you have a world champion and the green jersey, you also can take responsibility. But they didn't. And I think it's one of the beautiful aspects of our team that we always take our responsibility. And we pulled it off.
The trouble is there might be even fewer teams to help you after today because Gaviria won again.
Yeah, that's true, but maybe we have to say I'm the only real helper in the team, so I cannot do everything. And also maybe we already won two stages. We can also say for us it's already been a good tour.
Was there a moment today when you thought maybe because it was a strong group and they were working hard?
Yeah, and I already have quite some experience, and I knew they were riding tactically. They went slow in the beginning. They got the 7-8 minutes for free. Then they still rode easy, and then I knew after that climb they're gonna go full gas. And then at that moment I had to ride alone. Then Thomas de Gent, he came to help me. He has a big engine, and then I can tell you if you're riding for 80Ks. So then Nicky Terstra comes to help you, winner of Tour de Flanders, then in the legs really, really hurts.
So a Belgian team wins, good omen for tonight.
Yeah, let's hope. I'm so happy, so happy. Well, yeah, let's hope that's already a Belgian team that wins. Hopefully another Belgian team wins today.
Almost.
So, everything went, well, fine today.
Oh yes, it was quite all right. We sort of proficient, but... it was pretty close, wasn't it? And we knew from the last round about 4 kilometers to go would be quite strong headwind. So of course, we thought we would take about 30, 40 seconds. So it still was close. They did a good ride out there. There was long down, you know. The usual Mickey Mouse games, you know, and they almost made it.
Was it a vindication from the crash the other day? We felt that Fernando was really frustrated by losing the jersey, crashing.
That's you know, that's a part of the game, isn't it? I think Demar, he could complain also a little bit. He crashed the first day, and then he got the puncture. He's still third, so like a second actually. And I mean, everybody can write a small book about the bad luck we have in the tour. I mean, for the same money, of course, we could have won the first three stages also. We could have won the team time trial. We could have won the second if it didn't crash. But even if we can't really use it for anything, can we? But now I was quite happy he won again today. And it seemed like everybody's beaten mentally, isn't it? It is strange to see teams that have great sprinters and that doesn't even pull. I mean, you know, some Mickey Mouse team, they stay Mickey Mouse team forever because they're riding like Mickey Mouse teams, so why they never win. I think it's easier they do that tactic, we do ours, but of course I wonder, if I brought a sprinter to the France, I would ride for him. Otherwise, what would you bring him? It's strange, isn't it? Tomorrow is not really a sprinter day, is it? So I thought it was last chance today to ride for the sprinters, and certainly maybe they don't have faith in the sprinters. Poor sprinters from the other teams, eh?
Is it different after the team time trial? Are the legs more painful, or is it different kind of effort? So, how does it feel, do you think?
I mean, for the riders, they always complain like the hardest day in their life ever. I mean, it's been like that for 100 years, isn't it? I mean, you speak to them, they always say it's get harder and harder every year, get more and more nervous, you know. Like, I mean, we said that in 86 also. I mean, they're always complaining. That's part of being a cyclist, eh? You know, you always think it gets colder, more hot. The climb is getting steeper and blah blah blah. You know, it's cyclists always. I mean, you can have so much pain, proficient. You can have the pain you can have, you know, and the cramp and everything they're doing. They're just doing good job, the guys. And of course, when you're winning after working the whole day, it's sort of a release for the whole team. Like when you're beaten after yesterday, it didn't look too brilliant. Our team transfer did a good job, but I mean, it's a bit quiet in the bus going back to the hotel, isn't it? That's what we like about cycling, also.
Change of focus then with Julien Alaphilippe and Philippe Gilbert, with two stages that actually could suit them well.
Oh yeah, of course. It's gonna change a little bit. We have to look at the favorites tomorrow. Who can jump? You know, what they're gonna do? They're gonna ride for Demar. Could it be a bunch sprint anyway? Are the break gonna go? Who's in the break? It's a little bit up to BMC to decide also. But now we probably have a bit easier day tomorrow on the factory. We see never say never. If possible, then we maybe go in the final also. I think we might take a day off. We might take a day off. But on the other hand, we're greedy bastards. If we smell the wind, we're probably going to take it also. But we'll freestyle a little bit and see tomorrow.
Brian Holmes, always good value for this kind of thing. He does like to stoke up this kind of stuff. But they're in a position where they've had so many sprinters over the years. I mean, they won 5 stages last year with Marcel Kittel. It's almost a habit that the other teams will look to a quick step to do that work. And then it becomes a game of bluff, a game of chicken. You know, everyone else can afford to sit back and wait and let them do it. Or, you know, the alternative is to, what would they do? Just not chase and let the break stay away and then go, well, there we are, we told you so. Or do the right thing, really, which is put the shoulder to the wheel and bring it in and then finish off the result.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Kiss goodbye to stomach problems with the world's first truly isotonic gel. Science in Sport Go Energy Isotonic. Before you hit the wall, hit back.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
And you can really, the Breton can sing, you know. It's like the old Welsh, you know, chorus, because
Celts, fellow Celts.
Yeah.
Well, we heard a blast there of La Marseillaise as the game is about to get underway in Russia. But you also heard our Science and Sport message there, and we are very proud and happy to be sponsored by Science and Sport. And you, the listener, can get your 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. What were the other talking points today? Rigoberto Urán, I mean, they've had a very good start to the tour. I think the performance in the team time trial exceeded everybody's expectations, including their own. Today, and Urán had avoided the crashes the other day, so today he did crash. He did actually come off himself. And a very quick bike change with Dani Martinez. And it was textbook stuff, really. And he was back, and he helped by some teammates. And amazingly, for someone who fell in the last 10 kilometres, he got back on, which is a big effort and very unusual.
Well, that really impressed me, the way that Urán had numbers of teammates around him, possibly 4, maybe even 5 of them, that were there to pace him back. And that's so important. Without wanting to be, wanting to sort of speculate too much about what goes on in those situations, but it's very easy to not hear the message on the radio or not know where your teammate is and that there's been a problem, and not necessarily turn a blind eye, but be in the wrong place at that crucial time and not be there to help. And I think listening to Lawson, the episode about Lawson Craddock, you know, Simon Clark made the point in that episode of Kilometre Zero about how dedicated and single-minded the team is in their support of Rigoberto Urán. And they demonstrated that today. They got him back when the alternative, you know, Ilnur Zakarin is maybe not a potential tour winner, but he has enough about him to finish in the top 5 or 6. He was not left with as many resources to bring him back to the peloton, because of course Katusha are also trying to set up Marcel Kittel for the sprint, and that just shows you how the difference between a team that is all for one goal and a team that has 2 cards to play.
Also, I mean, I talked to Dimitri Konishev, and I also talked to Charlie Vegulis about Rigoberto Urán, but what Konishev was making clear is that in crashes from time to time the riders lose their earphones. So you have no way to liaise with them and to tell them, you know, wait there. So in a way, Zakarin was a little bit at a loss of what to do. And Konishev himself didn't really know what, you know, where Zakarin was, what he needed. So from time to time, the communications, you know, fail when you have a crash. And it can lead to this kind of problems. But Konishev, in typical Konishev fashion and sometimes Russian fashion, was very fatalistic about and philosophical about crashes. He was saying, you know, well, so far we've been spared by crashes. Urán had been spared by crashes. But he said, until we reach the Alps, all the leaders will have their own issues. And he told me, you know, in a sense, I'm pretty sure that by Sunday, all of them will be on an equal footing. in this respect.
Shall we hear from Charlie Wagelius, who you spoke to at the finish?
So Rigo had managed to stay out of trouble a little bit until now, and today in the finale, a crash.
Yeah, nobody wants to fall off in the Tour de France, but it's part of the game, and I think that the team managed it pretty good. They were quick on their feet. Dani Martinez gave him a bike in good time, and they managed it well, and we limited the losses, which was nice.
No major injuries, as far as you can tell. Scrapes on his knee?
No, he's got some scrapes on his knee. Obviously, the doctor will have a look at him. Taylor went down too. But for the moment, I don't think we can say there's anything serious.
Yeah. So no serious concern, no worries so far?
No, we're not worried. No problem.
So that was Charlie Wagelius on Rigobert Urán's difficulties today, but he rescued it. I realised, Francois, we forgot on this day of all days to do the Francois French flavour.
Oh,
what
yeah.
can you tell us about where we are?
Well, we're in Vannes. Vannes is a very interesting little place. I mean, we've been driving through it. It's kind of a medieval city by the sea. Very, very nice little... I really recommend it if you want to spend nice holidays in Brittany. It's one of the most beautiful cities in Italy. And oddly enough...
In Italy?
In Brittany.
Wow.
Wonderful.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
I think Francois was a little bit distracted.
I don't know. It was just, because even in the noise around us, it's all about Belgium and France and nothing to do with Italy. They're not even in the World Cup. Anyway, let's go back to this. So it's one of
let's
the most...
Let's talk about teams that are not in the World Cup.
It's one of the most beautiful little towns in Brittany. And oddly enough, Geraint Thomas should feel very at his ear because Brittany was people... This part of Brittany is very close to Wales. Everybody thinks, in Brittany they speak Breton, but there are various varieties of Breton. Mm. And the people who people this area... Most of them came from Wales in the 5th or 6th century because there were a big plague in Wales. And it's why this place, Vannes, is actually called Gwynedd in Breton. Gwynedd being, as you know, a county in Wales. So lots of places around here have Welsh names. The Breton that's spoken here is pretty close to Welsh. So once again, I mean, one thing, if he goes back, Geraint Thomas to his hotel, he's one of the rare people who probably can read the signs, on the side of the road.
And indeed Dave Brailsford. I'm not sure about Luke Rowe, but I know Dave Brailsford, who was brought up in Wales, speaks Welsh as well. A little postscript to the sprint finish today. We saw finally Dylan Groenewegen up there and thereabouts. He was the guy that I thought and other people thought might take this tour by storm because he, when he's firing, he's really, really quick. He was out of position today. He had to make a big effort. He came from quite far back and finished fourth on the stage. Kittel was fifth. But the guy off the pace again was Mark Cavendish. Mm-hmm. And I saw him speaking to Rod Ellingworth at the finish as he was riding back to his bus. Rod Ellingworth, Team Sky coach and formerly Mark Cavendish's coach. I approached gingerly, as you do, Mark Cavendish after he's not won, and he batted me away. He was not in the mood to speak. He's not, he's one of these guys who you tend to leave alone when he's not winning and things are not going that well. And things are not going that well for him, are they?
Oh, no, they are certainly not. I mean, out of the Tour de France early on last year, you can't really look at a list of other race wins and say, well, he's winning elsewhere, so maybe a win will come. There's not that level of confidence about him. And the sprinting field here is deeper, quicker, younger. Or better organised trains.
Yeah, there was André Greipel almost winning today. He went early. And
Greipel's less kind of erratic than Cavendish. Cavendish is all or nothing, whereas Greipel is always sort of 8 out of 10, and sometimes that's enough to win a stage. And today, he was coming up really strong, and that was the kind of... Because it was such a long, straight run in, I think it was 4 kilometres without a turn in the road. I mean, it was a real drag strip finish. And Quickstep really timed, it was Riquezi who came off the front. They really timed that very well, but still just almost left Gaviria with slightly too much to do, because Sagan was able to draw almost level, as was Greipel. It was a test of staying power as much of anything, and that's kind of what Greipel's good at, isn't it? Speed over a longish distance.
I think that's what we're saying, and what we're seeing now is, well, as I said, that there's only one train left, and it's a Quickstep train, because even the Lotto Soudal train, remember last year, last pack, was also seen at the front of the peloton for hours. It's not happening that much with Lotto Soudal this year. That they've probably changed the tactics a little bit, but still they still have a train in the finale, which means you have two teams with trains. Two of those sprinters are on the podium, and the third one is Sagan. Why? Because Sagan doesn't need a train, doesn't need anybody. He only needs Peter Sagan to be on the podium. And as we know on the tour, very often the sprinting hierarchy takes place in the first three or four bunch sprint stages. And well, it seems obviously that we have Gaviria, Greipel, Sagan, a little bit above the other, with Dylan Van Groenewegen just behind that, and the other sprinters so far look like Kittel and Cavendish look a little bit below par.
Hey, don't forget, you can listen to Kilometre Zero, our morning show, every weekday during the 2018 Tour de France. Kilometre Zero is supported by Hansgrohe.
A little reminder there that we are producing episodes of Kilometre Zero every weekday morning. So we've released two so far. They're sort of audio magazine features. Today's was about Lawson Craddock's battle to remain in the race with his terrible injuries. Tomorrow, Lionel, you've got
tomorrow. It's coming up fast. Adam Hansen, Lotto Soudal rider who completed his record-breaking run of 20 consecutive Grand Tours completed. Not riding here at the Tour de France, but he has been here these opening few days working for Eurosport. If you've been watching on Eurosport at home, you probably have heard a little bit from him. Really kind of interesting philosophical chat about that run of relentless Grand Tour riding year after year, doing all three of them, and how he feels not being here now, and what he makes of the Tour de France from the other side of the fence. It's quite interesting.
We must talk about today's breakaway and the guys in it. You mentioned the two French and the two Belgian riders, two Cofidis riders, 10 years after their last stage win at the Tour de France.
Yeah, I mean, just to shoehorn in a small gag at Cofidis's expense, a colleague and I used to describe them as Cofidisappointing. Because they used to be the big budget heavy hitters of French cycling. Year after year, they spent the most money. They had the budget and generosity of François Migren, the boss of Cofidis, for whom this... the team was his kind of plaything, really. He was almost the Andy Reese of French cycling. But there was also a commercial reason for that, because cycling in France appeals to a lower middle class, a working class base, and their business, without putting too fine a point on it, is selling expensive loans to people who need money. I mean, it's like the Wonga of France, isn't it? It's not a terribly cuddly business, is it?
It's not. And obviously they've expanded to Spain, and they're one of the major sponsors of the Vuelta as well, which is the reason why sometimes I know that listeners, our dear listeners like Chiro, would say, wonder why Cofidis are always picked for the Vuelta. Don't look any further, if they're not picked, the Vuelta loses one of its main sponsors. That's as simple as that.
But they haven't won a tour stage for 10 years, and I mean, that is 10 years of hurt.
Giving the boss a real migraine, isn't it?
It's the first time he's heard such a...
an exclusive gag there.
But there's been a bit of a revolution there, because they brought in Cedric Vasseur as the general manager. I mean, I know a few people. Well, we know David Miller very well. Rob Hales rode for the team, and they paint a picture of a fairly shambolic, wasteful outfit, really, even in the kind of glory days, failing to curb the excesses of Philippe Gaumont and Frank Vandenbroek when it came to the sort of doping and the lifestyle drugs. Kind of a team run wild. And in recent years, really, they've just been pack filler. They took a bit of a pasting in the team time trial yesterday. I spoke to Dimitri Klaes afterwards, and he really denied that they took it easy in the time trial
in order to get a couple of riders. Wasn't it?
Yeah, because you would think, well, take it easy in the team time trial, get a couple of men in the break the next day. I mean, it doesn't necessarily follow that it's that easy. But he gave me the impression that they were actually trying pretty hard yesterday and they were a minute behind the next slowest team.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I talked to Christian Guiberto, who's there. One of their team directors, Christian Guiberto, used to be with Team Sunweb. Another attempt, you know, to kind of reshuffle the way their philosophy. Because the problem with Cofidis, as you said, is that they've always paid their riders a little bit too much for what they did. Sylvain Chavanel, when he was with Cofidis, didn't do anything. Nasser Buani, since he joined Cofidis, lots of victories in minor races, but never delivered that at Tour de France level. So they had a problem there. So they first tried to remember to bring Eric Boyer, then it was Yvon Sanquer, who came from Astana with Alberto Contador, didn't work. And this year they tried with Cédric Vasseur, who belongs to the, you know, heritage of the team. So we'll see if it works better. But what Guiberto told me is that yesterday, actually what happened is that their leader is Christophe Laporte, but he got really injured and he's really suffering from the crash he had earlier on, and he was dropped after like 2Ks in the team time trial. So they actually waited for him, as Guiberto told me. They couldn't just let their leader drift away at the back. So they had to wait for him. So it was very frustrating for all of them. And this morning they had picked three guys to go in the break. As Guiberto told me, they had not at all scheduled to have two of them making it to the break, because it's a little bit useless, as he said. And also he said, well, it was proof that they really wanted to fight back after finishing last in a team time trial is not exactly what you expect from a team like Cofidis with the money they've got. And he said, but the problem is today maybe they reacted a little bit too strongly, because it would have been better for only one of them to be in the break and wait a little bit for the right occasion. And he said maybe tomorrow's stage or the day after are better stages to break away. So yeah, mixed feelings about all that. Dimitri Klaes, waiting probably for the cobbles and the stages near Belgium. Well, we'll see what they can do.
Well, at the finish, I spoke to another member of the breakaway quartet, Guillaume van Kiersbloek, who exactly a year ago on stage four was also in a breakaway on his own, that famous stage to Vittel. And he was philosophical about what had happened today and commended the other members of the break for all being very committed to it. Here's what he said at the finish. A big day out.
Yeah, it was a quite hard day. It was a quite hard day because after the feed zone we start racing, because the bunch give us only 1 minute and a half anymore. Yeah, it was quite hard after that, because it was all small villages up, down, left, right, and I think in the bench was also they were all I think. But we work all good together, the four, and it's like a long team time trial. I mean, it's only four guys.
Exactly a year after you were away on your own the whole stage.
It was the same, the fourth stage also. But today they catch me on 900 meters of the finish. I tried, but the bunch come too fast. Did
you guys speak to each other a lot? Because it seemed that you were all committed, and with having two Cofidis riders there, that may be altered.
Yeah, but I think it was good there with two, because they just keep riding. And the one I know, Dimitri Klaes. This morning he told me already, you go also in the breakaway, I say yes, and we jumped together. And there were four good riders for the break.
It looked like you might do it. 10 kilometers to go, we were sort of doing the maths, and it looked like you might do it. Were you thinking along those lines?
Yeah, on the moment we passed the sign of 10K, I thought maybe we're going to do it. Yeah, it was really close, but on the last roundabout we turned left and that was headwind, and if it was still sidewind, maybe it was possible.
Who would have won if you'd stayed away?
I hope myself.
So that was Guillaume van Kiersbroek, who had a big day out, and it didn't quite pay off. And there was another.
Got closer to the finish than last year. 16 kilometers from the finish last year in Vittel, and then his story was kind of overtaken by the Sagan Cavendish crash and controversy.
And it was sort of forgotten that he'd spent the whole day out front on his own.
On his own, yeah.
You know, it hardly got mentioned the next day because of what then happened. So.
At least today you had somebody to chat with.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we should go and watch. There's lots of noise coming from the various clumps of people watching this.
I'm more distracted by the smell of seafood.
There are a few conflicted riders, French riders on Belgian teams, Belgian riders on French teams. We spoke to some of them today. Pierre Rolland, Frenchman, sharing a room with Sepp van Marke, a Belgian.
Dimitri Klaes, the only Belgian in the Cofidis French team.
Yeah. Yep. This morning I was at the Lotto Soudal bus as Tony Galopin of AG2R, who used to ride for Lotto Soudal, of course, came riding round in the bus chanting, Allez les bleus, allez les bleus.
Yeah,
and then there we are. And then he went onto the bus to say hello to his former.
I also saw Julien Alaphilippe and Philippe Gilbert, you know, having a little chat. And Julien Alaphilippe said he doesn't like football, actually, so he doesn't care who wins.
Oh, well, there we go. Someone who does quite like football is Johan Ofredo, who rides for the Belgian team Wanty Groupe Gobert. I had a quick chat with him at the start about the game. We'll play out with him, I think. So thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you, guys.
You're on a Frenchman on a Belgian team. Will you watch the match tonight?
Yeah, for sure. But they have a French trainer with Thierry Henry. So if they win the match, it's also a little bit because of a French guy. So no, it's always a pleasure to share a moment together, and it's also a moment to drink something together, and it's always nice.
Will you watch the match together with some of your teammates?
Yeah, all together on the bus, and if Belgium wins the match, we will drink a beer, and if France wins the match, we will drink champagne.
So everyone's a winner.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Tom Wallis.